Welcome to Jawa Jabber, a Star Wars podcast dedicated to spreading our own little slice of positivity throughout the galaxy. From the prequels to the sequels to every Disney Plus spinoff they want to throw at us, we're here to celebrate any time we get to spend in our favorite galaxy together, and we want you to come along for the ride. I'm David Wren, joined by my bro hosts Dennis, Kyle, and Matt. We invite you to sit back, relax, and enjoy our fully armed and operational podcast.
And this is Jawa Jabber.
Hello there, Star Wars fans, and welcome to another new episode of Jawa Jabber. I am your sleepy co-host, David Wren, and I am joined by my best friends and bro hosts, Kynobi.
Hello there.
Dennis the Phantom Menace.
Hello, my fellow moof milkers.
Hi, Jar Jar. And Matt the Radar Technician.
Hey, this is Matt, the Radar Tech. I'm looking forward to having some real talk with all you real folks.
You're not a Sith.
This sounds so charged.
I know, like, you just sounded like Lando there. Like, that was like the, hello, what have we here? Like, that was, that's like your Lando line. I love it. It's great.
I'm feeling way less broody than normal, so.
Way less broody. All right, that's good.
You got a broody voice, Matt.
You definitely right, well, do.
How's everyone doing?
Other than just waking up, I'm good.
I God said, love look, it. If he's not in the chat, he's probably sleeping.
Yeah, and then so I hang up with you, and I've got 55 messages in the one chat, and I'm like, oh my god. I'm like, yeah, apparently I fell asleep. All right, but that's not what we're talking about tonight. Tonight, Kynobi, why don't you tell us what we're going to be talking about, what episode we're going to be talking about?
Well, we will be talking about The Mandalorian Season 3, Episode 5, Chapter whatever, directed by...
21, that is Chapter 21, for those keeping track.
Can't keep track anymore.
Directed by one of my favorite directors working today, Peter Ramsey, the ultra-talented legend who's also known for directing Into the Spider-Verse, which is near and dear to my heart. Written by Jon Favreau, no co-writer this time. And the director of photography, there's two for this episode, David Klein, who's done a bunch of the Mando episodes, and Paul Heuwen. Yeah, I thought the episode looked great. Visually.
Oh, yeah, it looked, I mean, this whole season has looked really good.
As far as I know, though, this whole thing was shot in the volume.
Okay.
Next week, Bryce Dallas Howard's episode was shot a little bit in New Mexico. That was the first time they were going offset.
Oh.
I think it's Manhattan Beach, from my understanding, like El Segundo area.
I've purposefully left this out of the group chat because I kind of want your guys's.
I think I need to piggyback off of that, David, just a little bit, just so our listeners,
absolutely,
just so our listeners understand. We've always talked about this on our podcast that Star Wars is something where it's a unique point of view, essentially. So where we can have opinions, and it doesn't mean that we have to like and love every single aspect of every show or of every part of the Star Wars universe. There are some things we're going to enjoy a lot more than others. And there are some things that we feel like it just didn't go right for us. But that doesn't mean that people who did enjoy that aspect have to take that negatively. It's just something that it just didn't jive with us, didn't fit with something we wanted to see. And I don't think it's necessarily seen as something negative unless we're constantly badgering onto it. So whether it's me, whether it's David or Matt or Kyle or something that just didn't work for us, I don't want any of our listeners to think that that's something that, you know, they're not allowed to enjoy or not allowed to like because it doesn't make you a, quote, real Star Wars fan or some silly baloney like that. It's really just an opinion. And it's like that's what's great about it, is that we can still have constructive criticism. We can still have, you know, great camaraderie amongst each other as fans and still enjoy the same franchise without having to love every single aspect of it, because I feel like there's also that far end of a lot of people who feel like because it's something they like and they have so close to their hearts that any aspect of it and any kind of negativity feels like it's a betrayal, when it's not. It's literally just an opinion. It's just a feeling, and everybody is entitled to have their own opinions to it. There is a limit, of course, when you start bashing other people for enjoying something you don't. And that's not what we do here on Jawa Jabber. And I just wanted people to understand that, you know, you have things that you love more than others, and that's completely fine. And we can all still have a civil, peaceful relationship and just enjoy it together in the ways that we like.
Thank you very much, Dennis, for more eloquently saying what I was trying to say, which is kind of right on brand. And hey, if anybody wants to fight me, that's all I'm gonna say.
The rum helps. You know, Gorian Shand gave me a little rum. It was delicious.
Oh my god. So in his first episode that he was in, and I know you guys all commented like about how cool he looked and whatever, and it's not that I didn't think he looked cool, but like, I don't know, I guess I just wasn't overly impressed. I was like, eh, okay, like, yeah, he looks cool, like, whatever. This episode, for some reason, his second appearance, I took more to him. Now, I don't know if that's because I had the three of you in my ear saying, like, oh, yeah, you know, that's the guy from the first episode, and I really, really liked him. Like, you know, digitally, he looks really cool and Davy Jones-esque and whatever. But I totally enjoyed him a lot more this time than I did in the premiere.
I have to agree with you there. I wasn't really that huge on him in the first episode he appeared in either. But, like, the whole pirates that all together, like, I thought were kind of cool. But him, just per se, I wasn't...
Yeah, really, I thought all, he was, you know, I thought he was end, almost but, out of place.
But in this episode, he really grew on me quite a bit. I thought they wrote
him me too.
Pretty interestingly funny. So I did get a kick out of his character this time.
And the only thing for me was that the suit they have on the person, the mouth doesn't really match up to the words.
No, you're right.
And George you're Lucas right. is really famous for saying, just make it say mama.
We'll work for anything. I was going to say, like,
that's
very Star Wars. Like I was going to say, that's very Star Wars, though. Like, you know,
I don't know. It was a little off to me, like, more than normal.
Now, time. You know who he reminded me of? He reminded me of Animal from The Muppets. Like, he just, you know, the way that he moves his mouth, like Kyle said, doesn't really look like he's always saying the correct words.
Right.
But at the same time, he's kind of like got that stringiness to him. He kind of looks like a really old, angry salad that's been sitting in your fridge for like 3 months.
been there.
Just watching you eat that pizza or that burger.
I was going to say, no, that's David's salad because he doesn't eat salad. So it came with the meal and I threw it to the back of the fridge. And, you know, 3 months later on a Thursday night, I'm throwing it out. So, yes.
Like, get the Mandalorian.
Yeah, no, like I said, I don't know what it was. I really liked him this time. And I didn't in the first episode. It's not that I hated him. In the first episode, I don't know, he stood out more to me this one. And I kind of like, and I know we're jumping around now, because that's what we do, but like, I kind of liked how he went down with the ship. Like, that was a very pirate kind of thing. Like, mm-hmm. You know, he didn't try to flee, he didn't try to save himself. He was like, no, I'll go down with my ship if my ship's going down, la la la. And yeah, no, I thought that was cool.
Yeah, what did he say? Like, something about a puffer pig's eye or something. Like, he's not going, he's not going to give up.
Yeah.
I wonder if we'll see Vane later on, though.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, Vane escaped.
Conveniently escaped.
Vane? You mean Voldemort in space?
Now
that's what he reminded me of.
Really?
He just always was, yeah, honestly, because he has the no nose and he has like that facial expression. And he was like, you won't get away now, Mandalorian. It's like, Avada Kedavra!
When he's just a Nikto.
I was going like, to say, he's a Nikto,
Yeah, like Return of the Jedi had Niktos and it had Weequays, but like even the Weequay in this episode, which was one of the pirates, like he looks very similar to the one in season 2 of The Mandalorian with we were at Mos Espa and we were at, with, what's his name? Who's your favorite? The guy who wore Boba Fett's armor.
Cobb Vanth.
Yeah. So there's that Weequay bartender, that kind of look. It's very different. Yeah, exactly. It's very different from the original trilogy Jedi, because they had like obviously different masks and stuff. So even different from the figures, but I think it's because the prosthetics are better.
Cobb Vanth is my favorite.
Well, you have a crush on him, I think.
Okay, that doesn't mean he's my favorite. I have a crush on lots of things.
So he's one of your favorite.
Well, one of my favorites. No, and I mean, I did name one of my porgs after him. So I guess, you know, I mean, that's a pretty, you know, that's a pretty significant. Matt, what were you going to say?
I liked it.
Oh, sorry, Kyle.
No. Want to hear Matt.
Oh, I was just going to comment earlier about, I think My favorite pirate really in the episode though was the was Smee the Ugnaught.
That's Smee. What I was gonna say. That's what he I was gonna say.
He was the captain's sidekick.
Oh my god. I'm not the only person that's thought that. Oh my god, he was totally
that's
Smee
exactly
to
what
his
I was gonna
captain
say.
Ugg. Oh, that's amazing.
That Ugnaught pirate. What did you think, Kyle?
That's what I was gonna say. That was my favorite pirate.
Is that really what you were gonna say? Damn, I should have I should have let you both say it at the same time. That would have been so funny. Oh, that's awesome. Yeah, no, he was really cool.
I love how he was like giving like the updates to Gory and Shandy. He's like, this is happening, and then this is happening, and then he's like, we'll do this instead. And he's like, oh my gosh.
I love that you guys all saw the Smee in him too. Like I love mm-hmm. it, like, because that just means it wasn't just me, and I love it.
The ship is pretty badass too, the
I love it.
Corvus or whatever it's called, something like
right.
that.
So I got it right here because I literally just watched it for the second time before the episode. Didn't finish it, but it's called a Cumulus class Corsair. And
Corsair, I almost say Corsair.
Cumulus is like a cloud formation, and then Corsair, fun fact, was actually the mascot of my high school, which was a pirate. It was just called
really?
Corsair. Nice. So when they said that, I'm like, hey, I know what that is. And just, yeah, the,
oh, that's
the look
awesome.
Of that ship is like, it looks like a ship that would be like, it almost looks because it's got that hammerhead look at the front, you know?
Yeah.
So it looks like it would be something that could potentially be in water, but at the same time, it is modified to look like a spaceship, which was really cool.
I was going
to
say, it reminded me of that hammerhead cruiser from, what was it, Rogue One? They had it in there, and yeah, okay, yeah, like it kind of reminded me of that.
It reminded me too a lot of the like the little Legends ships.
Yeah,
they did a lot of like, you know, they had a lot of the books that had like,
yep,
like a lot of the different ships in there, and they would describe each of them and like, you know, how big they were, how much crew they had, how many, you know, fighters they can carry, and all that kind of stuff. Or like even on like a lot of the artwork on the old Legends books where they had a lot of unique like ships like that. It really kind of pulled me back to that from my childhood.
I love all those covers and all that artwork from the Legends stuff. And it's funny because I notice a lot of familiar artists to me now that I'm getting stuff from like Star Wars Celebration and Dark Ink and all, you know, like I've started to, I don't want to say I collect, but I mean, I guess maybe I collect like some of the Star Wars artwork now. Like a lot of these artists that I'm really drawn to have done a lot of those book covers in the old Legends books. And that just kind of, it gives me like a little smile because I had all of them. And back in the day, I actually used to read. So I read a good number of them. And
David, you're being very modest. You collect a lot of Star Wars art now. You have more than you have wall space, to be honest. So you definitely do.
But I just meant in like the sheer scope of how much of it exists. I don't feel
for sure.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like
you're not buying artwork like I'm buying in TVC Star Wars figures. So
well, right, exactly. And again, it's kind of like the TVC figures, because I kind of collect them too, but I'm not a, oh my god, I need to have this wave, I need to have this one, I need to have all of these ones. Like, I don't, like, I know you get those, the ones that are all the different colors, like the prototype ones, and you have to have, like, every single version of it, where, like, the head is orange, and then the head is red, and then the head is blue, and, like, yeah. I'll take one,
except,
like, sure.
The only one that I'm not doing anymore, and we're getting off topic, as we usually do, but that's
a little
fun.
Bit.
The only one I don't get anymore is, when I started collecting that, I don't do the Darth Vader ones, because they had a Darth Vader special edition one before I started collecting, and I got one of those, and that was years ago. And it
wasn't that a Comic-Con exclusive?
It was, and it cost close to $100. So now to get all 17 variations is just absolutely ridiculous.
There are 17 variations?
Yeah, and I don't think that's worth the cost and the price. So I'm just like, I'm good with one. The blue head Vader,
that's
insane. Because they usually have six now instead of what they had back then, apparently.
They don't currently do 17 each. Okay, I was gonna say, I'm like, holy wow, that's a lot.
Just the Vader one.
Just the Vader one, which was the first one, right?
Correct. It was the first one. And they're coming out with a Mandalorian one. I'm sure y'all have seen it.
Of course they are. Why would they not?
But speaking of Mandalorian, I want to go through each one of your opinions of the episode overall before we, because we've already dived into some of the details, but like overall, let's start, if you don't mind, let's start with Matt and then Kyle and then David. Like, what did you think of the episode? If you want to give a rating 1 out of 10, that's cool. If you don't, then that's fine too. I just kind of wanted to see, like, compared to the previous episodes that we've seen, where does this rank for you in overall enjoyability, I guess?
I gotta say, this episode for me was probably one of the best of the season, if not the best of the season so far. You know, and I only it's actually funny because all the other ones I watched at least 2 or 3 times before now, and I've only watched this one once, and it was yesterday morning because I didn't get a chance to watch it last night. And then today was opening day of my other love of baseball, so I was watching baseball a lot this evening.
Oh, that's right. Happy opening, Matt. I'm sorry.
Go Tigers.
Go Tigers, and we
go
lost.
Go Tigers. Woo! Oh, I'm sorry.
Go Sox.
So I'm trying to remember back to all the details of this episode, and
that's okay. What's like what's your one highlight, I guess, if you could think of one?
I mean, I gotta say, really, the whole action. I do like action. My favorite part of Star Wars isn't always the action. Definitely,
right.
I think a lot of my favorite parts of Star Wars are usually the moments of heart, like,
yeah,
you know, like the heavyweight moments where there's, you know, where it's is slower, and you know, it's even when there's not much going on, it's just the feeling. But in this case, I think in this episode, I did love, like, you know, the whole fight, you know, the whole battle on Navarro, you know, all the aerial dog fighting and everything with, you know, the ships. But I gotta say too, I think everything with the end of the show with the armor and Bo-Katan and all of that, like, it really, that part really hit me.
I agree. I was gonna mention that, yes, at the end. That was definitely a highlight for me.
I think we all kind of probably have something to say about that.
I'm sure,
we can dive into it a little more. But what about you, Kyle? What was your thoughts?
I loved it, man. For me, it was where Bo-Katan talks about her father and her past, and then at the end, kind of coming to terms with, like, oh my god, this clan stuff is kind of real. When she sees a mythosaur, you know? But this episode, man, they knocked out of the park. The visuals were great. The little cameos were great. The score in this episode, I think, was the best all season.
Yeah,
I love
definitely.
That kind of, I don't want to say dubstep, but the disco kind of music they were playing. It was kind of funky when we went to the Adelphi base.
Yeah, so you want to know what that was called according to the captions? Because I wrote it down.
Oh, sure.
It was psychedelic rock music. That's what it's
like. Really?
I love that.
Interesting.
Yeah. It was very interesting.
It was.
Yeah, this episode, it was great. I would probably give it a 9 out of 10.
Yeah, I was gonna say like a solid 8 out of 10. I'm only saying 8 because I have a feeling the next 3 or like the finale or something is going to make me shoot for that 10. And I always kind of oversell things. So, you know, I'm going to try and be a little more on the David conservative scale. So I'm going to say like an 8 out of 10. No, I really enjoyed it. I thought it started a little bit slower, but then once it picked up, to me, one of my favorite shots, like Matt was saying, with the action, and you all know a lot of the times, like I used to laugh that my least favorite part of episode 1 was the pod race. And, you know, it's one of the most action packed and it's really cool to watch and the visuals and everything like that. But like, I was like, nah, give me the smaller moments. Like I like when Anakin walks away from his mother and doesn't look back and all that, you know. But what I was going to say was that shot where they all come out of the ship, like they drop out and then like they hit their jetpacks.
Yeah.
I mean, I've seen that, I don't know how many times in animation. And I just, there's something about Mandalorians with jetpacks. I just like, it's just so cool.
Yeah.
And I remember back in season 1, the first time we saw it, which was on Navarro when they came to rescue Din. But I just remember the first time seeing it in live action. I'm like, wow, this is so cool. And
yeah,
I remember after watching that episode in season 1, when I went back and watched some like Clone Wars episodes and like Rebels and stuff, like it made me appreciate it that much more now that I had seen it in live action. Yeah, no, I enjoyed the episode. I thought the acting in this episode was very, very, very well done, particularly Katie Sackhoff and Emily Swallow. Like, mm-hmm. Emily Swallow's voice is, I mean, she's kind of like Pedro, and I guess that's probably why they're the two that are always in the mask. But, like, the way she conveys certain, I don't know, syllables or words or, like, mm-hmm. you know, because, you know, these Mandalorian masks are, you know, they're like C-3PO. They have no emotion. They have no whatever.
They're expressionless. Like,
thank you. That's the word I was looking for, expressionless. But, like, you can, and it's a testament to their acting abilities also, including Anthony Daniels in the C-3PO suit, like, that you can always tell what they're doing. Now, the armor is a little trickier because she's always so, you know, like stoic and very, you know, matter of factly, and this is the way and blah, 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 blah. But I felt like this episode was the first time, at least to me, she kind of cracked a little, like, you know, like she let out a little emotion a little bit. And, you know, she was like, well, no, Bo, you're going, you know, maybe you can lead all of us and blah, 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 blah. And I just, I don't know. I was very impressed at that part. What about you, Dennis? What are some of your thoughts on it?
I kind of agree with all of you in a lot of those aspects. I like the fact that this felt like a Saturday morning serial, that kind of like George Lucas envisioned when he first wanted to do Star Wars as a television show, after the films, and kind of have that feeling of like, here's the beginning of the episode, here's what's happening in the plot, and here's the end, and the bad guy gets vanquished. And I really saw that a lot here, kind of like the Flash Gordon serials that he grew up on. And I love, and whether they did this purposefully or not, because if they didn't do it on purpose, I think that's just a testament of the storytelling and the way that they actually directed this episode, is that it engages people from beginning to the end, and it comes to some kind of resolution. Of course, there's a cliffhanger, which we'll talk about, but like, it moves the story forward. And I feel like that's just my opinion, but if George watched this, and I don't know if he does watch the new series and just kind of thinks about it while whether he's talking to himself or he's talking to friends or his family or whoever, I kind of feel like he would really appreciate this episode a lot, because I think it really pulled on what he wanted to do and what he envisioned, and now is coming to fruition because of what he started and what he, you know, what he wanted to see come to pass. So I enjoyed that part a lot, just kind of, you know, that whole where I'm glad we didn't leave off with Gorin Shard not doing anything, where it was like, we don't know if he's dead or not. Like, we're pretty sure he's dead, but it's Star Wars, so we're not 100% sure. I enjoyed the episode overall. There are a lot of good things, a lot of really interesting things. But I think one of the main things, one of them has to do with the armorer, but I want to focus a little bit on the interaction between Captain Teva and Elia Kane. Is it Elia or Elia? Am I saying
Elia Kane? Yes,
Elia Kane. Okay.
I mean, so, we can just keep calling her Katie O'Brien, but
okay, yeah. So you know, interaction,
we probably should. Yeah.
Yeah, I really like the fact that they're again talking about a gray area, or they're bringing that to light for us as viewers, where we've discussed this on previous episodes, where it's always very much black and white: Empire bad, Rebels good, right? And whether or not that was something that George wanted to start at the beginning, or whether he wanted to muddy it a little bit so we kind of got our minds thinking, I like that they're doing the opposite here that we see all the time, whether it's in the films or whether it's an animated series. It's always the Rebels or the quote-unquote good guys infiltrating the Empire or the bad guys. It's always them doing something to try to sabotage, destroy, explode, stop them from doing something bad. Where in this case, we have the complete opposite. We have actually what I've been looking for in a long time in one of these shows, is somebody who was from the Empire in some way infiltrating the New Republic in this situation, or the Rebellion, or whatever you would like to call it in this time period. And they're doing something where everybody thinks in that area that they have gone through that rehabilitation. They've gone through that. Now they're on the right side, right? The quote unquote right side. But they're actually doing something behind the scenes, which they're hiding from these individuals. Now, we know as viewers that there's something going on. There's something not right with her. And we all know probably it's something to do with Moff Gideon. But I like that they're doing that. And I like that they're making it like the viewers need to think about this. So the specific interaction I'm talking about, and this is like the last part that I'm going to mention, and then we can keep going forward in the episode, is that he says that, no, you guys didn't see the light, right? You got captured. And she said, no, I was liberated, right? And she said it in this way and in this tone of voice that he knows that she's not necessarily saying that because she believes that, but because it's a talking point, right? So when the Empire, quote, liberated the worlds that they invaded and took over, they said, look, we're liberating you from people like Gorian Shard, right? We're liberating you from pirates. We're liberating you from marauders. We are protecting you in the name of safety and control by keeping these people away, but they're also imposing a form of totalitarian rule on these planets. And in this case, it's not exactly the same way, but she flips the script and says, no, I was liberated, right? So just like the Empire liberated other places and had to have some people suffer so they could understand that it's for their best interest to join. In this case too, she's saying, you know, it's kind of the same situation here. You want Navarro to be helped, but maybe they need to suffer a little bit to understand that they need to become a charter in the New Republic. And obviously Captain Teva doesn't agree with that, but I think she's kind of flipping the script on that and saying, look, this is not as black and white as people would like to think. There are both sides here. And regardless of what side you're on, somebody on each side thinks they're doing the right thing. And I really think that that points to the storytelling in general. I think that really does a great job in opening that up and opening that up for discussion, whether it's in our real world or whether it's in this fictional world that we love to play in, this sandbox. I really enjoyed that aspect. Even though it was a small part of the episode, I was like, this is cool because it kind of ties things together that otherwise we're, you know, we love all the action. We love the Mandalorian. We love Grogu. But when it comes to these moments, I think sometimes it passes over our heads because it's not as in your face. It's kind of like a subtle context of the situation. So I really like that part. There's more stuff to get into, but let's keep going in the episode and see any other things. I know Kyle wanted to, he did mention about some cameos. So while we were on that subject, can you kind of let us know about, I think there's a couple cameos in this, right?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, the biggest one obviously was our boy Zeb. I mean, that was great. This was probably the best adaptation, I would say, of a animated character to live action. And they did a great job with using CGI. I gotta say, I know everyone's all about practical effects and I love how Cad Bane was a prosthetic, but CGI worked beautifully for Zeb and the Lasat. And I don't know if you guys knew this. I wanted to wait to bring this up until the podcast, but did you guys know Stephen Blum actually did facial motion capture for Zeb?
No. Oh, cool.
His son Brandon posted it on his Instagram story that he was someone, his dad, doing the voiceover. And
oh, that's awesome. I knew he had done capture. The voice because we had talked about it yesterday, like, you know, and you were saying confirmed it was Stephen Blum or whatever, you know, like, but no, I didn't realize he had done motion capture too. That's awesome.
Yeah. Good. So that was exciting. I mean, how do you guys think, Matt, you've seen some of Rebels, but all of it, right?
No, I've seen all of Rebels. That was okay. Clone Wars, no. Rebels, yes. And I loved Rebels. Okay. I agree with you. I thought the cameo was well done. Not only just in terms of how he looked, because he looked phenomenal. But I loved the subtleness of it, you know, like they didn't, you know, it wasn't like the Luke cameo at the end of season 2 where you see the X-wing and, you know, you have that anticipated build up, you're like, you knew a Jedi was probably coming, and then bam, it's Luke. You know, this one was just so out of, you know, unexpected, like all of a sudden, like he walks in with no, you know, fanfare, no anything, and oh, there's Zeb, and then he talks to him for a moment and then he's gone and that's it, you know. Mm-hmm. It was like a just a little tease, and I love how they threw that cameo with Ahsoka coming so soon. Like, that coincidence is pretty cool too.
Yeah, but I like you said, the subtlety was awesome.
Yeah, he's the first and live action character from Rebels that we've seen, right?
Well, kind of.
Yes.
Yeah, kind of.
What, Chopper in Rogue One, or is that what we're talking about?
No.
Yeah, and we've seen Sabine in the promo.
I would say we've seen promo. Yeah. We've seen pictures, but we haven't seen her in live action. We saw Chopper at the Mando Plus panel. Like, you know, he came
technically
out on
stage. Ahsoka too. I mean, yeah. Ahsoka technically too.
You're right. You're right. I mean, technically with the Ghost crew, but
right.
I mean, I'm thinking specifically like we know we're gonna see Hera. We know we're gonna see Sabine. We know we're gonna more than likely see Chopper and Ezra. But as of right now, you know, Zeb and for those of the listeners that I'm not sure how many people, because this is a deep cut for a lot of people who aren't like don't watch the animation. Or like aren't as diehard Star Wars fans as we are. So I don't know how people listen to our podcast with regards to that, but Zeb is, like Kyle said, the species name is a Lasat. His name is Zeb Aurelius, and he's actually a character in the animated series, the beloved animated series Rebels. And he's actually based off of Ralph McQuarrie's concept art for what Chewbacca was supposed to look like. So it's very, very different to what he actually became like, and very much more dog bear like than what I would say. Zeb kind of looks like a, I don't know, like a bat or something to me. I don't know. What do you guys think?
I would say a bat, like a really tall bat is a good analogy. Yeah.
It's just his head. That's, you know what I mean? Like, cause the rest of them kind of just looks like a, you know, he could almost be any kind of species or whatever, but his head definitely gives me the bat vibes. Yes. Like I would say you're on point with that. And that was one of the main things I really liked about Rebels was the art style, animation style, and how it really paid homage to Ralph McQuarrie and his, you know, like the TIE fighters looked different, the stormtroopers looked slightly different, like, but it was very much drawn to be like that Ralph McQuarrie art style. And of course
the lightsabers, they were super thin,
like on the, yeah, like on all the concept art. And it just, that was, if I'm being completely honest, other than the story elements like Vader and Ahsoka and, you know, all that stuff that drew me in to Rebels from that point of view, like the art style is one of the things that brought me into that show, which is ironic because any of the listeners from season one knows that the animation in the original Clone Wars is something that initially turned me off, and it was more of the story and Anakin and Ahsoka and all that stuff that eventually drew me in. And then over time, as the animation improved, I warmed up to it, whatever. But like when the Clone Wars first started, I self-proclaimed hated the animation. Like I remember they came out with like, and Kyle, I know this is going to like cut at your heart and I apologize, cause it was like your whole childhood, but like, I just remember being out shopping and I saw like the birthday plates and the napkins and stuff. And it was like that original Clone Wars animation. And I'm like, no, that's not Yoda. That's not Anakin. Like, no, they look stupid. You know, I was being a crybaby fanboy. And then, you know, eventually down the line, I would love it. So, you know, Star Wars got it over on me once again, like always.
We all eventually see the light, David.
We
right?
do. I know. As clinging to the dark side as we claim to be, we always see the light. You're absolutely right.
I got to agree with you wholeheartedly about the animation style with Clone Wars compared to Rebels. And I know we're off on a tangent here, but
no,
one other thing that just clicked for me too, when you said that a lot of Rebels was the animation style and art was based off of Ralph McQuarrie. And it rung a bell that the McQuarrie art of C-3PO and R2,
yes,
reminds me a lot of Chopper.
They really did Chopper like that. Yes,
yeah, uh-huh. With the arms and stuff that uh-huh. are in the yep. old R2 McQuarrie art. Like,
yeah, absolutely.
So I do love that aspect too. That they paid.
I'm looking at it right now. I have that the C-3PO and R2-D2 Ralph McQuarrie. I have it above my door. And I'm looking at it right now. It's totally Chopper, but with some R2 colors. That's all.
But I like how I think all the shows are kind of doing that. You know, like I can't think of any off the top of my head from Mandalorian, but I know they've been there. But the one I can specifically think of from Andor is the ship that captures Luthen's freighter in the tractor beam. And I can't remember, you know, it's like a track. I don't know if I want to call it like a It's not an interdictor cruiser like from the Legends universe that had the huge gravity wells, you know, that would prevent other ships from jumping to hyperspace. But it basically has, this ship had the big dishes on the front that were essentially, you know, high powered tractor beams.
Yeah.
And they called that ship a Cantwell class ship. And it's actually Colin Cantwell's original design for the Star Destroyer. Like, he was the first one to draw up a Star Destroyer and X-Wings and TIE Fighters. Even, like, he did, you know, Ralph McQuarrie did more of the, I think, like, the people and the scenes that were going to be. But Colin Cantwell drew some of the original ship designs. And they, so I thought that was pretty cool. They named that class of cruiser and used his original concept design is that cruiser in Andor.
I really love that. I love when they do that homage to people who really, you know, began a lot of this and don't necessarily get a lot of the credit. Like, this is what David said earlier. This is why we have Kyle mention the people who actually did the directing and did the writing and actually contributed a lot to the episodes that we're watching, because a lot of these people are in the background, right? And they don't get the attention and the recognition that they deserve. So as much as we can, we want to promote that on this platform. But I think, you know, it's just definitely something that I love that they do. And speaking of homage, in this episode, when Greef Karga is talking about Bullock Canyon, that's another homage to Jeremy Bullock, right? The original actor who played Boba Fett in the original trilogy. And that was really heartwarming.
That. Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, that was in my notes, Dennis, to bring up on the podcast.
Oh, nice. Sorry about that. I'm stepping up on people.
We're all doing that this episode. That's a good thing.
I know, right? It's okay.
Here's your segue. I know there's a couple other cameos in this, and some people may not have caught it. So I was wondering if you had any more for our listeners.
Man, I'm slacking, I guess. I can't think of, would you call, Carson Teva, wouldn't it be a cameo? Maybe, are you talking about Tim Meadows' character?
No, I'm talking about who else was in that that Adelphi cantina.
You guys noticed for the listeners, Rick, not gonna butcher his last name, Deborah Chow and Dave Filoni were in the Adelphi pilot bar.
Yes.
You could see Deborah's the first one they show, and then Rick's next to her, and then on the end you could see Dave with his trapper wolf with his famous cowboy hat.
I was gonna say with the cowboy hat.
Only Dave would be in a Star Wars with that cowboy hat, sipping on Spotchka when they're sitting over there. That was great. I saw that, and it was so fast that if you don't know that that's who it is, then like people would just think they're just extras or something.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, beating a dead horse, everybody knows that. Well, Matt wakes up with me now and watches it. First thing, you know, like 4:30 in the morning before I have to go to work. And like, it was one of those things that like I kind of thought that I saw, and then like later on throughout the day, like people were putting it on Facebook and like whatever, and I'm like, oh, okay, I did see that. But like, and to me, truthfully, first thing in the morning, very early on, the thing that gave it away to me was the cowboy hat. I was like, I think that was a cat. Was that Dave Filoni? Like, it was like that kind of a thought, but it was so quick that I didn't really think about it. And then, you know, like the action picked up and whatever, like I kind of had forgotten about it. And then later on in the day, you know, seeing people's reviews and whatever, and they were like saying that Deborah Chow and everyone was in, and I was like, oh, I was right, I did see that cowboy hat.
Kyle, I don't know if I'm saying it right, but I actually did look it up because I was like, I don't know how to say his last name, but I think it's Famuyiwa. I think that's what it is.
And that's what I thought it was too. I just don't want to correct people.
Yeah, I that's the best that I can do. So Rick was probably just the best way to go. David, I know that you know, I was going on a little bit of a soliloquy there with Kane versus Teva. That a little interaction there. I kind of just wanted to know, you know, your thoughts about that whole situation.
Yeah, no, when you started talking about that scene, I kind of just I smiled because I'm like, well, there goes my dyad again. We've got the same thoughts and whatever. And that scene with
Captain Teva.
Captain Teva. I have to get that in my head. This is like his 10th episode and I can't remember his name.
And then there's the Colonel Tuttle there that he was asking for permission to get some help from. And
what,
I don't know about you, Kyle.
From the Saturday Night Live guy?
Yeah, I'm like, who? I know this guy from somewhere. Where is he?
Well, he's the poor man's version of the guy from the MCU.
Oh my gosh, what's his name?
What is his name?
Don Cheadle.
Don Cheadle, yes. Thank you. Yes, yeah, he's like the cheaper version of Don Cheadle. Like, he's funny.
This guy is the ladies' man.
All the time. Like, that's not necessarily a negative thing. Like Chase Crawford is known as the poor man's Zac Efron. You know what I mean? Because like they look similar. They kind of are in the same type of movies, but
I guess saying poor man's is better than saying he's like the wish.com version of this.
Oh yeah, now see that has a negative connotation. Yeah, no, but like I was.
But please tell me you guys know who the ladies' man is.
The ladies'
you.
Man. You don't remember this guy as the ladies' man?
We're talking to you, Matt. Oh, you're on the podcast.
I'm disappointed. I wouldn't expect Kyle to remember this because this is like definitely 90s, but
I'm definitely before he was born.
Did we all literally change jobs
y'all
tonight?
Are triggering me.
Why did we all change jobs tonight? Matt's talking about Kyle's age. Dennis is hosting the show. What is going on? Like, this is like come as you aren't night. What is it, Halloween? Like, I thought we were
David
at the end
sleeping.
Of March.
He was late.
I was, yeah, right. I wasn't the first one on. Like, what is going on? I feel like I woke up in some alternate universe. I love
it. It's backwards day, but we always somehow bring it back to Kyle's age, and I'm so sorry, Kyle.
And like, no offense, Kyle, and you know I say this with nothing but love, but I'm thankful to you, Matt, because now I'm not the only one that has mentioned it, so I feel a little bit better.
All right, so the ladies' man.
What are you saying, Matt? Yeah,
the ladies' man, Colonel. What's his name? Is it Tuttle?
Tuttle. Yeah.
Yeah. So the actor Tim Meadows. I mean, he's from Saturday Night Live, right?
Yes.
So they produced a movie called The Ladies' Man. I think the character is actually on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, yeah.
They did a movie on it. And it's
yes, they did.
Off, like, it is
oh,
so
it's terrible.
Awfully funny. Yeah, but it's hilarious, too.
Oh, yeah, no, it's like that bad funny. Yes. Well, they did another, like, that was back in, like, the late 90s where they were doing, like, a bunch of Saturday Night Live movies. You know, like, they were taking the sketches and trying to make them into like an hour and a half movie, and they didn't really work because, you know, they work at Saturday Night Live sketches. But yeah, oh my God, Matt, I had forgotten about that movie.
Well, at least one of us knew.
Right? Is that, Matt, is that where you got all your female skills from, that movie?
Pretty much. I watched that movie religiously through high school.
You know, it makes a lot more sense.
And through puberty.
Matt's over there taking notes.
It makes a lot more sense. No, Matt. So I remember at the Orlando airport bar and, you know, there was like that kind of pretty girl and her ugly friend like across from you. And like you were like totally like smooth talking her. And she like at first wanted no part of it. And then like you just kind of naturally made her comfortable or something. And she started to talk to you. And I was like, wow, this girl like went from 0 to 60 in like 2 seconds. Teach me this power, Matt. It was amazing. Like it was.
So it was Colonel Fred's at the airport.
Yeah, it was just so like it was amazing. I like this girl. Like I remember when he first opened his mouth. Like she gave him this look. Like who the heck are you and why are you talking to me? And like a minute later, she's like telling him her life story and like, oh, I'm stuck here and we were on a bachelor weekend and blah 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 blah. And I'm like, teach me this power, Matt. Like, yeah. So I guess I have to rewatch this movie because apparently that's where this comes from.
See, I must just go straight into a force trance because I don't even remember it.
Must have been some pretty good beer, man. Must have been...
You know, you did compliment the beer. You said that it was a very good beer. I remember you saying that.
Those IPAs will get you.
Right. But no, so to
well,
cycle
better
to
for cycle, like $16 at the airport.
Yeah, I don't know. My Mountain Dew was like $4.50. I was like, are you kidding me? So to circle back from our little tangent that we love so much, Dennis, I agree with you. That scene, the acting in that scene, the even just the facial expressions from an acting point of view in that scene were wonderful. I do not trust Aliyah Kane as far as I could throw her. And as all of you know, and many of our listeners know, my brother is the athletic one in the family. I am in no way athletic. I mean, I can do some damage with a lightsaber, but that's about it. She's evil. I'm sorry. She can say she's reprogrammed. She can say whatever she wants. She's evil. I will, as Juliet says at work, I will die on that hill. But
Katie O'Brien would disagree with you on her Twitter. She actually got accused of that, and she's like, I'm the bad guy? She's like, what?
No, that's her wink, wink, nudge, nudge, keep watching.
Of course.
That's not, yeah, that's not now. But no, so what I was going to say was, yes, when it, like, you hit the nail on the head, as you always do, and it's not that I didn't like it, okay? I loved it. And for you people that can't follow my train of thought, this is what I was talking about at the beginning of the episode. Like, I'm not criticizing. I'm not saying I dislike it. I think it's very well written. It's very well acted. It's like, and I guess it's that black and white and gray area. And it just, it hit me in a very strange way. And I still, it's something I wanted to discuss with you guys. And Dennis, you really talked about it a lot and kind of answered some of my thoughts on it. But like, you all know my two favorite characters in Star Wars is Anakin Skywalker and Kylo Ren. All right. You don't get more gray area than the two of them. I almost feel like my initial thought was the New Republic people just kind of took over a lot of the practices that the Empire already had in force all these years. You know, the Empire was bad. Like, yes, there was some gray area. I guess I never thought of it that way. Like, when I read the Legends books, I never took it that way. And it was just confusing to me. I don't know.
So I don't feel like, I think I know where you're coming from. I don't think they took over and started doing the same thing as the Empire. I don't think you're saying that either.
No, I think, like, I mean, yeah, it's not like they just gave the stormtroopers new helmets and we're like, okay, no, yeah, you're our rubber soldiers now. Like,
there's a transition of power there where there is that, and it happens in our real world too. When you have our, you know, our president in the United States, and then it moves to a different president, it takes time to get from where they were to where they want to be. So there's that transitionary period where, like, you can see in the previous episodes of The Mandalorian where we had, you know, the doctor who was trying to still utilize Imperial technology, but they were saying, no, we're going to destroy it. We don't need it. That's their way of eliminating the Empire's influence. His way was trying to see, hey, I can still use this information in a good way to help the New Republic. And there was that conflict going on there. And it's similar here because it's going to have to be a transition, right? It doesn't happen overnight. It happens through time. And the New Republic thinks we need to go in this direction, but you can't go from point A to point Z. You got to go in between the steps to get to where you want to go. And I think that that's where this part and the genius of this part is that when they're telling this and showing how we get from the Empire to the New Republic to the Resistance, and Matt touched on this with the book that he talked about, I think it was Bloodlines, where Leia is no longer a part of the New Republic because she wants to take it in a different direction. So she forms the Resistance. And then of course we got to have the connection to the First Order. And how did that come? Was that from the Remnant Empire? We're going to have all these dots connected. And so there has to be this gradual transition and progression of the storyline. So it's not necessarily that, right, the New Republic is picking up where the Empire left off. It's that they're trying to make a smoother transition from one regime to another, but there's also still remnants of it. Why? Because these are people in real life and in this franchise and in the fictional aspects of it want to do what's best. And sometimes they do the wrong thing, but they don't necessarily see that as the wrong thing. You mentioned Kylo Ren and Anakin. Okay. They don't see themselves as the villain, right? The villain doesn't see themselves that way. They think they're doing something well, something good for the good, for the betterment of others. But sometimes they take the wrong path, right? And we see that only in retrospect. We don't see that when it's necessarily always happening. And that's the same situation here, right? So the Empire was bad. And now the New Republic's trying to correct what they did, but they still have some remnants of thought. And in some ways you have infiltrations like Kane, where she's actually still poisoning the well there. She's still acting in a way to where she is she's acting like she's still in the Empire, but she's pretending like she's a part of the New Republic, and that's not helping them progress in the way that they want to go. So I totally get where you're coming from. It could totally rub some people the wrong way, because it does seem like there's almost a melding or a meshing. It's like it's a web that doesn't seem very well put together, not in the aspect of the storytelling, but in the aspect of, you know, delineating the differences between these two regimes. So I totally understand where you're getting at there.
Yeah, and I got some thoughts on this too, that maybe it'll help you, David, or maybe not.
Yeah, Matt,
maybe
I wanted your opinion, because I wanted your opinion specifically because I know you're big into the Legends stuff. And again, like I said earlier in this episode, it's not that I read an overabundance of them, but like I never got the feeling that I got from this episode when I read the Legend stuff. I don't know what necessarily I thought happened after the Empire, but like, I don't know. I don't know. Please, Matt, chime in.
In the Legends universe, I think they made every, you know, it was more black and white. Rebels good, Empire bad, New Republic good again. And they, you know, they didn't really, I mean, in some of the books, they might have touched on, you know, some of the darkness of little parts of the New Republic and stuff. But for the most part, the government was, you know, more just. There was probably less corruption. And I don't know if they really dove into the politics as much as I think they already have in the Disney era, because that was, I think, one of the biggest gripes of the sequel trilogy, is that everybody wondered how the New Republic could let the First Order happen, you know, how, like, what was their problem? And a lot of people had issues with that whole, how the government was, you know, depicted, and really a lot of questions, because they didn't really describe the structure of the government all that much. And it took a lot of the books, I think, to a lot of back reading to understand exactly what the thinking and thoughts were with the government. And I think this episode actually, to me, perfectly described the way that the New Republic government kind of functions and is viewed, and that's that it's dysfunctional. It's not that it's necessarily, you know, the Empire was a more dictator, totalitarian regime under the Emperor. There were definitely good people working for the Empire who thought they were doing good and who were, you know, tricked, just like, you know, the Nazi regime, because that's essentially who the Empire is modeled after, was the Nazi regime, where there might be have been a lot of people in the German and Nazi army that thought they were legitimately doing good. They might have thought they were good people with good intentions. Whereas with the New Republic, like kind of like what Dennis said, you know, it's a whole, you know, from top to bottom, you have such a wide range of people in these levels of government. You've got, you know, people at the top who are good, and you've like in this New Republic, you've got a Senate again, where some of the senators might be corrupt. Some of them might be good. So you've got that whole body of government, but the way they styled the New Republic government was they wanted it to be less top heavy with power and more of a Senate body again, which can be dysfunctional. And right. So you've still got all these mid-level people, lower-level people who you've got some people who are probably great, and you've got some people like this Colonel Tuttle who just doesn't really care that much, you know? He's just kind of like doesn't really care either way. So you're going to get that at every level. And I think one thing they're doing with The Mandalorian that I've kind of read some people are griping about, because they only wanted to focus on Mandalorians, is that, you know, and John and Dave even said they were going to do this, is this show is also a bridge between the original trilogy and the sequel mm-hmm. trilogy. And I think they've stated it takes place in the Outer Rim. And one of the dysfunctions of the New Republic is that the Outer Rim is basically not, you know, same with the Old Republic, really, that it's not even under their jurisdiction. The New Republic can't reach it because it's just not big enough. You know, they disbanded their military. They have a peacekeeping force, basically. So they don't have the reach out to there. And so really, that's what's allowed the Imperial remnants to survive out there, like Moff Gideon. It's why it's a lawless area. So
right. So, and I get that. I get that part. Yeah. That part has always made sense to me. Yeah. And again, because in the Legends books, there was always the Imperial Remnant, and then of course they had Thrawn and the whole nine yards. But like, yeah, no, that always made sense to me. I guess it's just a different point of view that I didn't necessarily see at first.
I think they have to show the New Republic and their ineptness to kind of
spread light
on exactly how Moff Gideon is able to do what he's doing and why the Mandalorians are basically kind of having to fend and fight for themselves and also other people on the Outer Rim, like the people of Nevarro.
I think to me personally, it was just more shocking, I guess. Like, I think I had I wasn't sure specifically in my head how the New Republic ran things, but like I had an idea in my head, and then this is like, I don't know, it just kind of turned the idea on its head. So I think it was just more shocking to me than anything. And again, it wasn't that I disliked it. It's not that I dislike the direction that they're going. I think it's fascinating. Give me a show about, like, can we get Andor in this time period? Like, give me Senator Leia and Senator Mon Mothma and all this stuff, like, fighting in the New Republic Senate. Like, I don't know. I guess for some reason I want a political Star Wars show. I never thought I would be one that wanted one.
I honestly feel they actually try to insert it into a show like The Mandalorian or into another show like, you know, well, we had Andor, but like even another like Kenobi, where they try to insert the political things that are going on in this universe, because I'm not sure it would be as well received with the general audience when you start going into the nitty gritty of stuff. Right. Some people would enjoy it for sure, but there are others who it would just, you know, even in this episode, right? Some people may not even have hooked on to this part of the episode. They just want to see Mando. They want to see Grogu, right? And so they're not going to be exposed to that, and they will certainly not go to the lengths of watching a show specifically just about that. But I don't know, Kyle, I know that you have some thoughts, and I don't know if you want to veer us into a new direction, but I think there's some other things that we probably want to talk about in this episode, right?
Yeah, I was definitely thinking we should touch on that cliffhanger at the end right there with Gideon. I mean, is he being rescued by Imperial Super Commandos? Was he being rescued by Koska and Axe Wolves? I mean, there's a lot of options out there.
I mean, it could be some rogue Mandalorian.
Mm-hmm. That's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Because Bo's supposed to go find all the other remnants of the Mandalorians and unite everybody, right? That's what the whole point was of her taking the helmet off because the armorer said it was okay. And then saying she's walking both ways, right? The way of the Mandalore and the way of those who don't. So we can all be united. So maybe we'll figure out who was it. And maybe they took him for ransom, or maybe they took him because he paid them. Maybe it's just another covert of Mandalorians that have not found the ones that we're used to yet.
And can we go back to that real quick with the armor? Yeah. Because that was another thing. Again, it's not that I disliked it. Like, I found it fascinating. I thought it was, you know, really cool. But like, any of them could have went in and said, hey, I saw a mythosaur, and then she's going to let them take her helmet off. Like, I don't know. Like, to me, it was and I don't know if it's like character development, like she's starting to believe less about the cult and more about just joining everyone together. So like the armorer's character development, like, you know, she's kind of softening in her ways or something. It caught me completely off guard. Like, you know, and I think it was intentionally written that way. You know, like, Bo walks in and, you know, she's like, remove your helmet. And I was like, wait, what? I like that Bo was like, is this a trick? Like, you know, she like hesitated to like remove it. And I don't know. I really enjoyed that scene. I thought it was very, very interesting.
I personally think that she doesn't necessarily have to totally soften her stance and like their covert needs to move to that route of taking off their helmet. I think maybe she's realizing that with the way Bo has kind of earned their respect, that maybe more Mandalorian coverts, even with their way, you know, their ways being different, maybe they can cohabitat and get along. And it's not that they have to abandon their ways. They can still respect each other's ways, which I think is kind of an important, you know, like tie to the real world, is that, you know, the armor sect can have their way of, you know, not removing the helmet and all that, but then the other Mandalorian coverts can also have their own rules, and they're all okay, and they can all, you know, they can all coexist. It doesn't have to totally be one way or the other. And that's, that kind of was the thought and feeling I had coming out of that scene.
Yeah, definitely. Because, you know, for so long, she's been like, I mean, that's what set this season in motion. She was like, no, you have to bathe in the waters because you took your helmet off for 2 seconds to say goodbye to your son.
Well, Pedro, you know, might still, I mean, if you still want to be in their covert, then you might still need to do that. But she basically, you know, kind of accused Bo of, and the other Mandalorians, of destroying Mandalore because they didn't follow the way. Whereas now she's saying that
yes,
maybe both of their ways can coexist.
Can coexist, right? Exactly. It's the coming together, exactly. Which, yeah, again, I thought it was fascinating. I was like, wow, this is really cool. But like, you know, of course, my sarcastic self was like, you couldn't have thought of this a couple episodes ago. So, like, you know, Din could have just came back. So that leads us to the last question of the night. And I know you guys are all going to have an opinion on this, because we lightly touched on it in another episode. But now that, you know, now that the helmets are coming off, so to speak, Din and Bo babies, do they keep the helmet on or do they keep the helmet off? What do we do? We need your opinion.
I think they have to keep the helmet on right now.
Okay.
She doesn't, but maybe he still will.
So you don't think if they did get together, she would keep it on just for him?
You know, that's a discussion they're going to have between each other and their preferences during that intimate
moment. Well, and
that's
the thing. So we're having this discussion now because it was brought up in another episode and quickly tossed under the rug. So, I you know, our listeners want to know this answer. Like, you know, Bo and Din babies, what happens? Does the helmet stay on? Do the helmets
and
come off?
Let's see what Kyle and Matt's opinions are. And then, Kyle, if you have any other things to say about the armor situation, I would like to hear that too.
As far as helmet on, helmet off, I mean, I don't know, honestly. But with the armor, I think she definitely has some ulterior motives.
Yes.
I there's something deeper that I think we're missing that's beneath surface level, more than just uniting the clans. Like there's something in it for her.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what that is yet. I think a lot of the imagery in the episode of her being in the shadows is something towards something else, if you get what I'm putting down.
Yeah. How Bo was kind of in the light and she was, yeah.
Yeah. So what that's an allegory for, I don't know yet, but just want to throw that out there.
Yeah, I think I would actually bounce off of your thought there, Kyle, in that the armor, right, in that scene is standing in the shadows, and whether that's intentional or not, I would tend to think that it's intentional that the writers and director actually did that, because we do see a lot of that imagery in all throughout Star Wars. It's not a mistake or an accident when they have the lighting situation done in specific ways. And Bo is actually kind of standing half in the light and half in the dark. I think that armorer being completely in the dark, and the way that it kind of had more of like a, I wouldn't say a sinister music background, but it was a little more intense. And I just feel like I got a bad feeling that she's got some kind of scheme going on. Maybe she's trying to manipulate Bo into doing something that she wants. I've seen different kinds of theories out there that I really hope she's not, but people think that maybe she's Rook Cast from the Clone Wars series, where she was one of the members of the Mandalorians, right, that followed Maul because of the horns on her helmet. I don't know if they're going towards that. I have thought she was going to take her helmet off when Bo took hers off.
Well, so did I. I kind of was thinking, oh, are we going to see Emily under the helmet? But
yeah, but there's something up for the armor. Like, I feel like she's hiding something. She's been acting pretty sketchy for a while. And I don't know what it is, but I'm really excited to see if something comes of that. And if nothing comes of that, then I guess we're all off on some way.
Well, and it's funny, because I touched on that, I think it was the last episode, just her dialogue with Bo. I was like, like maybe there's an ulterior motive going on or something like that. What if what if she's behind Moff Gideon? Like, what if she sent someone to go get him or something? Like, maybe...
I don't know. That's a far-fetched one.
I mean, it's far-fetched, but if she's sinister, maybe she... I mean, because she didn't help them on the ship with Luke and everything. You know what I mean? It was Bo and and the other two, like, you know, WWE people. It wasn't, and of course, you know, our beloved Cara Dune. Like it was, but like the armor didn't help with that. She was off with Heavy and Little Kimmel. So
about you, Matt? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you guys. I think I could definitely see and feel some kind of shiesty motive possibly with her. It's hard to really imagine what it could be, but I definitely kind of get that vibe that there's way more hiding behind her than what might be on the surface. But it kind of goes back my thought on the whole Moff Gideon escape and the Beskar that's found in the shuttle. I honestly kind of wonder if it's a red herring, like, you know, if it's
just, to maybe, you know, frame Mandalorians. Yeah,
could be. I mean, it could be something that simple, but it also, it could be something else, you know. But
I don't really think it's the armor. I was just kind of throwing that out there because we were talking about like her ulterior motives. My gut says it's a red herring, like you just said, Matt, truthfully. Like,
we all just agree that like it was awesome seeing that Lambda class shuttle just show up in the light out of nowhere? I was I pointed at the screen again, like that Leonardo DiCaprio meme. I'm like, I know what that is. And
that was a really beautiful sequence.
It was absolutely gorgeous.
And that's always been one of my favorite ships. I'm not really sure why, but like that ship, I don't know if it was the design or
it's
like
a great design.
Yeah. And like ever since, like, you know, Return of the Jedi, how they, you know, the six of them are in that shuttle, you know, well, the Empire didn't have Wookiees in mind when they designed her, Chewie, like that whole, you know, and going into Endor, like, yeah. I don't know. I've always really enjoyed that ship. And I mean, I enjoy all the ships, but that one specifically, yeah, it was really cool to see that again. I was like, yeah. And like when they had it in season two, when they had Dr. Pershing and they had, you know, like they were flying it. Like, I love that ship. I love whenever that ship makes an appearance.
Well, regardless of what happens and where this story leads us, like the Anzellans and Babu Frick say, we're going to be okay. We're going to be okay.
Well, duh, it's Star Wars. At the end of the day, all that matters is that we're together.
I agree.
All right, well, that's going to do it for another episode of Jawa Jabber. Please let us know your thoughts on the matter. What do you think about Din and Bo baby making? Are they going to keep their helmets on or are they going to take their helmets off? Who do you think kidnapped Moff Gideon? Are we ever going to see Grogu use a lightsaber? These are answers that we want. These are questions that we want your answers to. Dennis, come on, give us a social media spiel.
All right, well, please go ahead and follow us and like our page on Facebook under Jawa Jabber. You can also find us on Twitter and Instagram under Jawa Jabber Pod. If you want to send us an email, it's jabberingjawas@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. We'd love to hear any of your thoughts, and we'd love to make you part of the show. So please reach out and interact with us. We would love to be able to talk with you and see what your thoughts are on any of our musings and any of our silly antics here on the show.
All right, like I said, that's going to wrap it up tonight. We have a lot of exciting content coming up for you guys. The end of The Mandalorian Season 3. We're going to have to talk about The Bad Batch at some point. We still have our Galaxy's Edge episodes on point. And, of course, we're going to be coming to you live, well, air quote live, from London, England and Star Wars Celebration 2023. So keep it tuned on Utini Radio for new episodes of Jawa Jabber. For Matt the Radar Technician, Kynobi, Dennis the Phantom Menace, I'm David Wren. Thank you all very much for listening, and may the Force be with you always.
This is the way.
This is the way.
This is the way.
Yup.